Yes.
Yes? Yeah.
You may have answered this already when you were describing being nobody being somebody, but I'm realizing I'm still stuck with the being one, and every time I see you, it's like I'm in another spot of it, but here's what it is, there's a lot of my life, like, I've just not really had a good sense of self, small self. And like earlier when you said, you know, if you realize your divinity, you can't go around with self-deprecation, just
mm-hmm.
And I'm aware of that, mm-hmm. But here I am at 45, sort of doing what ideally could have or should have happened a long time ago with feeling good about myself,
mm-hmm.
Simultaneous to the trip of realizing I'm a soul and I'm not this small self that I think I am. And both tracks are running at once.
Right.
But they're crashing into each other.
Why?
What's crashing? I feel like I bounce back and forth between, like in life, say an event might happen, and I'll feel, like I noticed when I came up to you to say hello earlier, and you held my hand and kissed my hand, and I felt this both shyness and like I went away, because I didn't feel, the old I don't feel good about me showed up for a minute. And I watched that, like the witness was there right in the moment.
You're doing fine, what's the problem? I hear you, I mean, you hear me and I hear you, what's the problem?
Well,
just watch that one too. The part of you that says, I want to let young parts grow up. That's just more of it. All your models are just models of your mind. Just
they
keep watching.
Like
I know. Join the club. Oh, it's infinite varieties of models of who we are and what we think we're doing, and that one too, and that one too, and that one too. And just when you think you're done, there's another one, and the thought I'm done is another one. The third patriarch says, even to be attached to the idea of enlightenment is to go astray. I love that one. Yes? Yeah, these are old friends. They're old models we've had of ourselves. And you'll notice that you just thought it's all gone, and then something comes along and it comes up again. The minute you say, oh, damn, it's there, you're feeding it. Instead of, ah, so, there it is, and then it'll go away again. It'll come back again another day. None of them ever go away. I've turned them from these neurotic monsters. Oh, my God, I'm back in unworthiness again. Holy shit, how will I live with this? I thought I was done with that. I'm too great and spiritually alive to have this. And I started my whole life oriented to getting rid of it again. Now it's, all, you know, it's like, it's my style. It's like an old shmoo that drops by. It's a little being. And, oh, my old perversity. Look at my neurosis. Come on in, have tea. You know, and it's more your style. You kind of get, in this society, there's so much reward for being neurotic and being a victim and being about to be helped and being really trying to seek. I mean, people come up and they say, I'm a seeker. I say, why don't you be a finder, you know? What is this business about being a seeker? You know, I'm getting healthier. I'm letting go. Good, enjoy. And I mean, that's what your mindfulness finally shows you.
Yeah, that helps. I guess, even though I've heard you say that hundreds of times.
I know, isn't that poignant?
Yeah,
she's had this problem, I've answered it. She's had the problem, I've answered. We've gone on through life just doing this, isn't it? Both of us know that. That's what's fun about it. You see, no, go ahead. You never know that I'm telling the truth. Guilt. I think the mindfulness of that, what you're describing, of that experience within yourself, is a practice to use to extricate yourself from identification with it. That is, to the sense that you're telling me about that, the feeling I'm not doing enough and the feeling of guilt. I mean, you're describing a situation, feeling I'm not doing enough and I feel guilty. Is it correct? That Where is your awareness in relation to that? Is that who you are, or is that who you're describing? At this moment, are you not doing enough? Yeah. I don't question, I mean, every one of us has a residual of genetic, environmental, and karmic stuff that leaves us with a whole lot of that crap. I mean, that stuff in us. The question is, what do you do with it? And I'm inclined not to prolong the past, not to feed it. This is very simplistic. At one point, my guru said, Ram Dass, give up anger. And I thought, how naive. You don't give up anger, you work it out. You do something about it. He just said, give it up. I thought, maybe he knows, you know. I'll try. That's already a problem. And over the years, I just started, every time I saw anger, I just can't let it go. I didn't try to figure out why I was angry or whether I was righteous about it. I just realized anger's not going to get me liberated. And guilt isn't either. So I would say when you notice guilt, notice it, and then go on. Instead of how much time do you want to spend feeling guilty? These are all states of mind. That's all we're talking about, is states of mind. We're not talking about something that happened 20 years ago. We're talking about a state of mind in you now. See, and what happens is you're very clear and along comes something and it makes you feel guilty. And immediately you're caught in I'm guilty. It's a place your mind goes. Then the question is, how long will you stay there before it self-ejects? Or it'll transform into something else. Somebody comes up, oh my darling, you're so unguilty. And you're like, well, maybe I'm not so guilty. And then you come up for air from them. And it's a constant play in order to deal with this stuff. And this is all stuff of the mind. It's all the stuff of the mind. It's the clinging of awareness to this and that. And you get so that when you feel the awareness clinging, you immediately go into whatever... I mean, why do you think I carry these beads around like all my life, practically? I mean, I sleep with them, I'm with them all the time. This is my device for not being busy perpetuating the suffering. It keeps bringing me back to the emptiness, to the center, to the quiet center, to the place. Just, sometimes I'm just completely caught in whatever you get caught in, you know? And then I'll feel the bead on my finger. And there'll just be the remotest thought of, ooh, am I caught? And screw that, I'm going to stay caught. Because I'm right. I like that one. And I just sit with it, and then I begin to feel the bead there, and feel the bead, and say, uh-oh, come back into space again. It's like coming back into the sky after you've been busy being preoccupied with the clouds. Just coming back into being the sky. Yeah. When you lose your equanimity and your beads don't work, what's your biggest regret, basically, he's saying, over the last 25 years? Biggest regret. The biggest regret. Well, I certainly regret filling the space. I really regret... Regret. Meaning I wish it never happened. Like that. I wish it never... Well, the closest I get are to what I would consider some moral errors. That is, where I did something where intuitively I knew that it wasn't coming from my deepest truth. And knowing that it might cause suffering because it wasn't coming from that place. That would be the closest thing. But when I look at it, I see that those things have burned their way home in my being, so that now I'm not sure I regret them. I mean, I don't know that I look back at anything in my life quite that way, because I see it all as part of a pattern. I mean, I think that the depth of my understanding now includes my humanity that has made some bad choices along the way. But I don't regret them in that sense. Is that dealing with the question? It's an interesting one. No? Yes. Finding one's life purpose? Finding one's life's purpose. Well, there are a couple of levels I could answer that at. At the deepest level, I would say, to me, the purpose is clear. The purpose is to awaken and to become free. And in that, that is the most compassionate thing you can do for all beings, including yourself. So that feels comfortable to me. When you're looking at it at a more concrete level, my purpose or my direction or my something or how to live my life, I don't know that there is a rule book you're very comfortable with. I mean, I used to teach career counseling decision making at Harvard, at the counseling center as one of my add-on courses. And you could become a lawyer or a doctor or an Indian chief or something. There was a list. And I look at the way my life has come out, and I wasn't on that list. And nothing in what I was thinking then had anything to do with who I am. So it's really hard for me to see much continuity in the whole game. I mean, I can't see anything but a strategy you can take to constantly listening as a strategy for living life, to listening and tuning and keeping a beginner's mind and keeping open to possibilities. And in the course of it, something is unfolding. And at some point later on, you may look back and say, ah, that was the purpose of my life. But I'm not sure that the concept of a purpose isn't a rigidification of something you're clinging to feel secure in the vast unknown. And it might be more interesting to not know what your purpose is. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know who I am or what I'm doing here, and I don't even care. Isn't that interesting? I mean, people at the interview me all the time, and they say, do you have a message for the audience? And I say, no. That's very. They figured they'd have at least 5 minutes then, you know. No, I don't have any message. So I don't think I can help you. Is that okay? Yeah. Dying and intervention. How to know when to not intervene in somebody's dying.
Yeah, or when it is maybe time to do something and not know the leadership, the outcome.
How do you know when you do what you do with another person?
You know, I'm dying now.
They're not there to say, I'm dying now. I'm just repeating for everybody else. I'm not mimicking. I thought it would save me telling later on. I just keep telling. They're not dying. They're not there to tell you, don't do it or do it.
Yeah, or that, okay, you know, we're all on this road now, we know where we're going to, and it's sort of like we're all in agreement that this is the process of dying, and, you know, I don't want any kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're not getting the information feedback from them to tell you where they're at. Well, I don't think there's a rule in the game. I think you have to listen intuitively with your heart. I don't know how else to do it. There are times when I've known somebody very well, and then I project into them when they are no longer communicating what I experience they must be feeling, and then I act on it. Because there's no other way to do that, because everybody else around them I don't trust any more than I trust my own judgment, my own intuitive wisdom. And that has led me to help people die and to not help people die. And I can't have any rule that I can see. I don't see other than being as clear and empty and quiet and empathetic and listening and not having a fixed model of what I'm supposed to do. I think that's the optimum thing I can do in this situation. Is that dealing with the question? Yeah. Yes. Burnout. She's a nurse. She has a hard time not being exhausted by the process of helping other people out with their suffering. Yeah. Join the club. Yeah. And I would say that it has nothing to do with what you're doing, it has to do with how you're doing it. And what you think you're doing and what outcome you're attached to. There is a concept in India that's called doing your dharma. Meaning it's your part to play in this whole thing, to be a ministering angel. You do what you do, but it's in God's hands what's going to happen. You can only do it as impeccably as you can do it. But don't take it all so personally. You're not doing it, you're merely expressing the instrumentality of your nurse skilled in this and you do your game. The Bhagavad Gita is very clear on this. It says, it doesn't say it in these words, but burnout is the result of, this ancient text says, burnout is the result of identifying with being the actor, just play with these two for a second, and being attached to the fruits of the action. Now, the actor is being the nurse. The fruits of the action are relieving their suffering. If you're attached to whether you relieve their suffering or you're attached to being a nurse, you will burn out. Now, how could you not be attached to being a nurse and not be attached to the fruits of the action, and why would you still do what you do? There is dharma. That's the place to do it from. You just do it because it's being done, like your heart's beating. You're not busy, I'm beating my heart. You nurse because nursing is. The minute you identify with, I'm doing this, you'll burn out. The statement, one does nothing and nothing is left undone. It means you rest in a place in your being, and all around you is nursing and caring and suffering and the end of suffering or the not end of suffering, and it's all surrounding you. But the minute you identify with that which is making it happen, then your competence is measured by whether you did it or not. And the anxiety inherent in all that will destroy you. You hear that? So the practice of karma yoga is to do what you do to serve others, but extricate yourself from being the actor or being attached to the fruits of the action, but you still do it. Right? Nursing is, and I am. When I go on a tour of 60 cities, one every other night for 4.5 months, people say, don't you burn out. Who it is that thought he was going on a tour of 60 cities for 4.5 months burned out long ago. What's left is just this process that is going on a tour of 60 cities for 4.5 months. And this process is perfectly at ease. I mean, why would it burn out? It's not going anywhere. It's just doing its thing. Every day you get up, you do things, and you go to bed. You don't burn out from just getting up and going to bed. You burn out because you think you're doing something. Well, we're all doing something all the time. Just don't get your mind. Your mind is what burns you out. It's really interesting. It really is. I mean, I really see that burnout is a state of mind. And people say it's because I'm physically working so hard, and that isn't what it is. It's the way in which they're physically working. But I realize you've got a hard yoga. Because nursing, those things that put you in the presence of other people's suffering, where they look to you to take away the suffering, and you often can't, is a very, because their suffering is rooted in something much deeper than anything you can do for them. So you end up realizing that what you're doing with each human being is being with them. And then the doing of your skill is what you do, and what happens to them is what happens to them. But you're still always being with them. Hang around all day meeting fellow souls. Some of them you're sticking needles into, some of them you're taking their bedpans. Who the hell cares? Just, hi, you in there, I'm in here, wow. At the end of the day, you've had a soul-rich day. If you're busy taking away bedpans all day, it's a rough one. I'm just playing with it, but you can hear it all. I hope it helps.
I have a question about what you talked about not belonging in the past.
Past.
The past.
Yeah.
But I think I've heard you also say not denying the past.
That's right.
And something about maybe embracing the past.
Yes, so into the present. Yeah. Yeah. When my mother was dying and she was at home, she came home, she wanted to come home. And then she didn't want to go back to the hospital, but the doctors and my father thought she should be, we'd be better taken care of in the hospital. And I knew in my heart that was not really what she wanted. But yet I didn't have the status within that situation or the confidence in myself to go against my father and the doctor. And they took her back to the hospital and she died alone the next morning in her hospital bed. In a way she'd want to die. And for years I felt very guilty about that. I felt bad. We were talking about guilt before. I felt, you know, like, it's too bad that happened. It's really too bad that happened. And I began to see that those kind of things in my past, there were like little ill-digested pieces of cheese or something like that in my intestine. They were just sort of hanging around all the time. And so when one of those came up, instead of going back into the consciousness where I was feeling like I should have done that, what I do is I bring that experience into the present awareness. And when I look at it and I see the culture she chose to grow up in, what everybody's expectations were, why my father did what he did, why the doctor did what he did, why I did what I did. I see the whole thing and I have a compassion towards it that includes myself. And in other words, my present perception is of that situation as a compassionate, I feel compassion towards it. And that compassion begins to replace that guilt. Right? And then the past is now in the present in a new way. And it's not compelling me to relive or to get caught back in the thing that I was caught in before. Right? So you get free of the past by bringing it into the present. It's still there, but it's not pulling you back into the past. You're not sentimentalizing. It is part of the past that's there, but it's in the present. Am I dealing with the question at all? It's a very interesting little subtle place, isn't it?
You want to see something that people expect you to do that. And but I think I'm hearing you saying that let things happen the way they have to.
He's talking about goals, and he says people expect you to have goals, and he expects to have goals, but he's hearing me say, let things happen the way they happen. That doesn't mean don't have goals. See, I can have a goal. Like I have a goal that in about 30 minutes I'm going to get in a car and we're going to drive to the Detroit airport and there's going to be a plane there that's going to take me to Denver and another plane that's going to take me to San Francisco. That's the goal. I have in mind being in bed in San Francisco at 1 a.m., all right? Whether I will be there or not, there are a number of variables between here and there, any one of which may go awry, okay? But I do have a goal. The question is not having goals, the question is whether or not your attachment to the goal prevents you from being fully present in this existential moment, right? Now, whether I get to San Francisco or not is not destroying this moment for me. That's all in there, but I'm not holding on to being somebody that's about to go to San Francisco. I'm just being here now. Do you hear that? And yet here now includes the fact that in a half an hour I'll get in the car and go to Detroit. Am I dealing with the question a little bit? So I think one has goals, and then one can act in a way to get the goal. But I think the way one holds the goal in one's mind can create suffering or not. You have a goal, but whether it'll happen, you don't know. You don't know. You can work towards the goal, But it may not happen. It may not happen for something new, and you'll be so busy feeling bad because you didn't get the goal, you'll miss the new thing. And that's something deep in all of us, by the way. That's not just you. Not just you. The inertia, when you've had a goal and then letting it go when it's not appropriate anymore, it's a big one, without being busy mourning the loss of the goal. That's another one. Yes? I think you beautifully articulated the two planes of consciousness that you have to live on simultaneously. That's the tricky part of it. That you have those goals, and they are for your own self-development and so on, and you also, there is a part of you that doesn't have those goals, that just is aware of this whole situation. And it's not the kind of selfless you're talking about is the selfless on the plane of having the self. These are two different planes of consciousness. They're not on the same level. So you may be very selfish at one point in the sense of selfish, selfless, and then over time you begin to feel the way in which that set of behaviors alone is alienating you from a situation you want to be part of, which is the larger world, which has other people in it and their sufferings and so on, and then your behavior changes as a result of your own pain, and a whole new set of things starts to happen. And you're still being selfish. I mean, for me to want the environment to be surviving is selfish. It's just what size ego am I talking about? Am I talking about me, or am I talking about this one, or this one, or this one? And a lot of it is what level of yourself you're identifying with. I mean, you're eating and your intestine is breaking down food. You could say, well, what am I? I'm a food breaker downer. You are, but that isn't the level of reality that your definition of yourself. Well, the one you've got is only another one. Get back out. I mean, you're doing stuff for the survival and the safety and the security of that separate entity. But that isn't all you are. That's that. So you may stay within that boundary and then feel, why aren't I selfless? Or you can see that you are also selfless. And then as you hold those two together, something starts to keep changing, to integrate, to keep that tension going in a way that is creative and not destructive. That's interesting. Very interesting question. Yeah.
Well, my curiosity is a little bit deflated enough to have read your books and Dan Rock's books on psychedelic drugs and so forth, when you made the point about this culture being not being a good one to experiment. But if you could, if someone were going to, what would be your recommendation of a mindset and drugs and so forth?
Living within the hypothetical world of your choice. I would say you would look for a setting that is safe and supportive and as minimal paranoia as possible. That if you're new at the game, you make sure that there is a guide who is well-versed in the whole ritual and can be present and available there for you. That would be useful. Then I would listen carefully to make sure, and tune to make sure you know your connection. So the quality of what it is you use is wise. And I would learn as much as I could about the history of that and the ingestion and how to use it. And then I would set my mind that I am using this as a sacrament in order to bring me into a deeper understanding of my own being, and prepare yourself as if you were going to have a sacramental experience. And when you are feeling very peaceful, and you're in a quiet setting, then I would explore with it. Okay. Hey, everybody. 4:06. And what I'd like us to, I'm sorry, I can't take more questions. What I'd like us to do is to just join with me in a very brief meta-meditation. So if you just close your eyes, and I will repeat three phrases, three sentences. And after I repeat one, if it feels good to you, we can say it together. What this is doing is saying, we have had such an opportunity to be together today in this really tender, listening, heartful way, sharing this journey. And now what I'd like to do is join with all of the rest of us in sending from this group some energy and love to other people elsewhere, so that we may share this with others. And the phrases are, may all beings everywhere be free from suffering. May all beings everywhere be free from suffering. May all beings everywhere be peaceful.
May all beings everywhere be peaceful.
May all beings everywhere be free.
May all beings everywhere be free.
And in India, when we meet and part, we say namaste, which means I honor the place in you where when you're in yours and I'm in mine, there's only one of us. Namaste.